It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Fans are standing at Wrigley. This fan support day in, day out, just incredible. We never take it for granted. It is not this way in every park, trust me. Bouncer to third, this is going to do it. Mastroboni throws him out. A complete game for Justin Steele. His first win of the year, and it's a complete game.
It's Chris Ronji on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Good evening, friends. How are you doing? I am Chris, and I am with you until 9 o'clock tonight. It's great to have you along for this ride that we're going to have over the next 3 hours. 312-644-6767 is the phone number to join the show, but you knew that. We are, I'm on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter, at Chris Ronji, if you want to bark at me that way. I am more than happy to take your complaints and your calls, so I'm right there for you, at Chris Ronji. And, of course, the phone number I gave out a moment ago, 644-6767. You can call that number. You can text that number. And those are all welcome as well. Leo Stoddaher is producing the show tonight, and we've got it's kind of busy. We weren't intending for it to be this busy, but it is going to end up being like this. Kylie McDaniel will stop by, talk some ball with us. Tony Andracki will join the show as well. Mark Grody on the Bears, he will be with us. Cody Westerlin on the Bulls, and old friend Wayne Randazzo, you remember him? He worked for 670 The Score for some time and has gone on to a terrific career in baseball broadcasting with the New York Mets. And most recently, currently, he is with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. So Wayne Randazzo, doing TV play-by-play for the Angels, is going to be on the show today. So, of course, he's in town for the series against the Cubs, which ended in a Cubs victory. And, boy, how good was Justin Steele today. The complete game for him, two hits allowed, and that is it. He finishes out, and I was watching the game and thinking, oh, you know, he's going to get through six innings here, low pitch count in the 70s. It'd be nice to get him to seven. It'd be nice to get seven innings out of him, and he did much better than that. What a terrific game, and one the Cubs definitely needed. His ERA is under 3 for the season now, at 2.95. So what a great afternoon at Wrigley Field for him, and one of those games that the Cubs definitely needed. What else is happening? Well, the White Sox are taking on the Miami Marlins. These are literally two of the worst teams in baseball, and they are playing tonight. And this game is happening as Tim Anderson this week, well, I guess on Friday, at the end of last week, was, I can't do math, was it earlier this week? Whatever July 2nd is, he was designated for assignment. And I know there's been some reaction by you over the last several days about that. I know he's gone and sort of out of the picture as far as the Sox are concerned, but... We're just a few years removed away from him being on the cover of MLB The Show. Guy was an up and coming star, and it just has completely fallen apart for him. And now he has been designated for assignment. I find it to be very sad. He was a guy who I think they hadn't even called him up yet. And I had the opportunity to interview him at Sox Fest 1 year. I believe it was 2015, maybe it was 2014. And, you know, I found him to be a really nice, at that time, kid. And I was rooting for his career. And obviously that has not worked out. Did for a little bit. He was one of the best players in the game for a pretty short period of time. And now it has all completely come apart for him, which I find to be... Just from an observer, the standpoint of somebody on the outside, I find it to be sad. I like the guy. I wanted him to have a terrific career, and there's still opportunity for him. But to go from being on the cover of a video game, which is seen as an honor, to just a few years later now being designated for assignment, that's difficult. So that is happening. You've got the NASCAR race happening this weekend. The Olympics are coming up. There's a lot going on in sports. People talk about this time of year like there's not a lot happening. Well, there is. There's this. There's also the Bulls. There is also what happens with Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan. And, of course, if anything does happen tonight, we will pass it along to you and react to it. But, again, we want to hear from you tonight. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. So I'm looking at last year, Cubs, 2023. And where they were on the 5th of July, they were 7 games back of the division. They had a record of 40-45. And it was still about a little less than 2 weeks before. So if we're talking about July 5th of 2023, they were about 2 weeks ahead of this point, 2 weeks ahead of going on that 7-game winning streak that sort of made the decision for the front office that they were going to hang on to what they had as opposed to selling at the trade deadline. I'm wondering what's going to happen this time around. And again, they are at the moment in playoff contention, but they are 5.5 games back of a wild card. They're pretty far back in the division. Last place, you know the deal, 11.5 out. So I don't think much of their chances here. Of course, they could go on some sort of massive run here, but I don't think you want to count on them to do that. But as I look at the National League and try to assess what all of these teams are going to do, and there are 13 teams as we sit just past the halfway point of the season. Of the 15 teams in the National League, 13 of them are within 5.5 games of a playoff spot. They are either in a playoff spot currently or within 5.5 games of a playoff spot. Now, granted, the Cubs are that team 5.5 games back, which means of all the contenders for a playoff spot, they are dead last. So, do you expect them to go on some sort of run here over the next couple of weeks? Are we going to see another win streak like we got toward the end of July last year? Or does it even really matter this time around? And I think if you have listened to any of the smart general managers or presidents of baseball operations around the league over the years, some of the best will concede that even though they might be mathematically within striking distance of a playoff spot, many of them know when to cut bait first. They know that, yeah, okay, 5.5 games back, that's doable. Definitely, they could leapfrog 12 teams to get to a playoff spot. That could happen. Sure, yeah, maybe it does. But do you cut losses now and try to put yourself in a better position for next year? And I bet most people listening to this, and you tell me if I'm wrong. You got the number. You call me. Tell me I'm wrong. But my guess is the majority of you listening are thinking to yourself, yeah, don't play that game. You know, see what happens over the next week or two. Yeah, maybe they go on some sort of run here. Maybe they do leap over a bunch of teams in the process and put themselves in better position for the playoffs. But don't count on it. And if something appears before you that you cannot pass up, then you go for it. And right now, I would say that most players on this team with maybe Shota, I would say most players on this team should be available right now. And even if they start a winning streak and they are 5 or 6 games into a winning streak, I would almost err on the side of making that deal if it's a good one. It cannot be a deal for the sake of there being a deal. It has to be a trade that really benefits you, whether it's next year or this year toward the end of the season, whatever it is, it has to be that. It's got to help you out. It can't just be a trade for the sake of a trade. You are not in that kind of position as an organization. But I would not operate, if I'm them, even if they do start to win a little bit here in July, if there's a good deal to be had, I'm taking it. Probably. I mean, we saw what happened to them last year. They did go on a run. They played themselves into playoff position. The team said, okay, well, this is a year that we're going to go for it then. We're going to see what happens. And it didn't quite work out. I would still be thinking about that if I am them. And then when you get into the offseason, you have got to invest. You have got to pay for talent. You cannot be afraid to pay for talent. You cannot be afraid to overextend yourself. You're the Cubs. You have resources. In fact, you have the most resources in the entire division. There's no reason you can't pay for division titles and pennants. You're the Cubs. Look at that ballpark. Look at the neighborhood around the ballpark. Look at everything you own around that ballpark. Look at your television deal. Look at what you have as an organization. You're in the third biggest market in the country. So it doesn't have to be this year. And I understand you might also be listening thinking the other thing. Hey, we are only about a little over halfway through the season. You don't need to give up right now. And I'm not saying you should. I'm not saying they should just say, this season's, it's over. Let's just look ahead to next year. What I am saying, though, is maybe this is one of those years where you really start to plan for the offseason and then get aggressive. That's what I'd want them to do. And I think it would be in their interest to do it. Now, in the meantime, you might really go on a run here anyway because, well, the National League stinks. And you never really know what's going to happen here. But also, because there are so many teams still in playoff position, you've got a lot of teams that are probably not interested at this point in dealing from their major league roster. So that difficulty exists as well. But keep in mind, as you're watching all of this unfold on the 5th of July last year, they were about 7 games back in the Central Division. They're worse off than that now, as I mentioned, but in the wild card race, they're right there. But I think the main takeaway from this is forget about 2024. Forget about this year. You're going to have some really good individual seasons from a couple of players. I would enjoy them as they are happening. But man, when the off season comes around, you have got to invest. You've got to get that payroll up there. And I understand that paying for talent does not necessarily equal wins. It does not necessarily equal playoff appearances. It certainly doesn't guarantee a World Series win. I get all of that. But you know what it does? It removes as much doubt as possible. And that's how you should be operating as an organization. Take away as many shreds of doubt as you possibly can. Because I'll tell you this, going into the playoffs, if you make it there, you would much rather have that team with a $280 million payroll than the team with a $150 million payroll. Wouldn't you? So we'll see what they end up doing. 312-644-6767. Let's visit with Danny downtown, who is with us on the Score. Hi, Danny.
Hey, good evening. So I was thinking that for this trade deadline, it kind of reminds me of our thoughts with the Bulls this past offseason, where I think just about everybody was saying, sell, this team is not going to make the playoffs, or if they do make the playoffs, they're not one of those teams like the Heat from a couple years ago to make a run. They were not going to go anywhere. So I think from the Cubs in the next month, I think we need like a large win streak or an overwhelming win record. And they just have to pass the eye test, I think, too, to prove that they should be buyers at the deadline. Because otherwise, it's not good to to mortgage the future on just a team that doesn't look poised to make a deep playoff run.
I would agree with you, Danny, and I would say this. There are two things, though, that are slightly different here. I believe generally in Cubs ownership more because they have shown in the past that they are willing to go for it, that they are willing to invest, and that they're willing to be bold. It's possible that has changed since the World Series, but I still think that's there. So I think that's one difference from the Cubs organization to a Jerry Reinsdorf organization. I mean, I think to an extent, both teams kind of like to do things and win within the parameters they've set for themselves. But my feeling on the Cubs is they would be more likely to go bold. And I think that's the first thing. The other thing is, in baseball, as opposed to the NBA, if you have a team that's pretty good in baseball, you can get hot and you can win a championship. It's nearly impossible for a team that's just okay, pretty good, to win the NBA championship. It's a whole lot tougher. I mean, you've got to be a team with real star power on it to win the whole thing in the NBA. So those are really the two differences in the situations. But otherwise, overall, I think there's a lot of truth to what you say. And appreciate the phone call. 312-644-6767. I'm Chris Ranji, hanging out with you for the night. It's good to have you on a July 4th weekend evening on a Friday. You could be out doing stuff, blowing things up, and you're hanging out. You know what? Hell, you've got the Odyssey app, don't you? Put it on your phone and go blow things up and listen to the show. I'm Chris Ranji on The Score. Tony Andracki. Oh, I'm sorry. No, Kylie McDaniel is going to join us next. Tony's joining us in the next hour. But Kylie McDaniel, will talk some ball with him when we come back on.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
For track pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
The Score.
We're back with host Chris Ranji on The Score.
A happy 4th of July weekend to you on this Friday. Hope you are enjoying your weekend and being safe and you've kept all your digits. We've been talking about the Cubs. We've been talking about what happens prior to the trade deadline, which is coming up just a few weeks away. And to discuss that with us, it is time to go to the guest hotline, brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Kylie McDaniel covers baseball and is a baseball insider for ESPN and is with us now on The Score. Good evening, Kylie. How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we appreciate you being with us, especially with it being a holiday weekend. We know people are busy. But just sort of trying to assess where we are in terms of the landscape prior to the trade deadline. And as we've already talked about here tonight, you've got the National League. You have all of these teams, 13 of them, who are within 5.5 games of a playoff spot. Still have a lot of teams in the American League that are in contention. The extra wild cards, of course. As you look at where things stand right now, how active do you think it will be, or do you think it's going to take a little bit of time here before anything happens before the deadline?
Well, I mean, we saw Aaron Civale. We've seen some, you know, sort of smaller moves where maybe a guy's out of favor, going to lose a roster spot. Another team can get the, you know, the low-hanging fruit to get an easy improvement, but not necessarily a high-end player, a player with lots of years of control left. I think we'll continue to see those moves as usual. I think we'll see, you know, maybe a dozen relievers change places, especially on rentals or on one-year deals. I think the real question is the really big names, the Mason Miller, a closer for Oakland, Garrett Crochet with the White Sox. Do any of these huge names move where it won't necessarily be a Juan Soto level package, but it'll be maybe two really good players, almost as good as the guys in the Soto package, and then two lesser players would be, like, I think the kind of packages you'd be looking at for those guys. And I think too many teams think that they're going to be competitive 3 or 4 years in a row and don't want to fully sell either that many prospects or that good of a player with multiple years of control, that I think these sort of market forces are generally pushing against those giant deals happening. I think you need someone like Mike Rizzo in Washington and AJ Preller in San Diego, who are both sort of old school scouts and men of action that made that Soto trade, which I think in retrospect doesn't look that smart for San Diego. And I think Washington maybe would have liked to hang on to him, although they got a lot in return. I think you need one of those. Like, it's not a perfect storm, but you need like everything to line up in just such a way for a giant move like that to happen. And I don't think, short of AJ Preller himself inserting himself into the trade deadline, I don't think the conditions are really there where there's enough sort of either desperate or very aggressive teams to make one of those giant deals. I think it'll be a lot of medium to smaller deals.
Well, what about for the Cubs specifically? Because as I look at them, it doesn't look like they're a great candidate for just about anything, whether at this point, whether it's acquisition or trading away from the roster right now. I don't know what they are. I don't know what they are in terms of a trade partner, either one way or the other.
Yeah, I think Cody Bellinger is maybe the big name where I don't think it's abundantly clear if he's going to opt out of his deal. I think he probably will, but if he finishes poorly, maybe he opts in. That also is a very hard contract to trade. A lot of teams will trade for a guy that has 1 year left on his deal. They won't trade for a guy that has 1 year with multiple player options that could add up to over $50 million. That's kind of scary because you think you're committing to some level of payroll and you might get $50 million more as a surprise. And given, you know, where teams are or were in the winter and still maybe are now based on uncertainty of, you know, what their revenue is going to be and thus what their payroll is going to be, I don't think anyone's really looking for that necessarily. And, yeah, if you go down the rest of the Cubs roster, it's a lot of guys that either are not worth their contract and you can't trade them, or really good young players that you want to hang on to, or are pretty good guys on, like, longer-term deals or, you know, to your point, like, they don't really fit a trade. It's not like, oh, we're having a bad season. This guy's got 1 or 2 years left on his deal. We got a prospect coming up behind him. Let's clear that money and then spend it in the offseason. That's typically what you would see with a team in their situation. But also, if they rattle off 7 or 8 in a row, they might see themselves in a different situation than they are right now. Because, as you said, like, all these teams are pretty tightly packed. So I think they're, like, the situation they're in and the roster that they have and what their payroll could be, I think they're incentivized to continue sort of going for it. And if somebody gives them a great offer for Bellinger, I think they'd consider it. But I don't really see the same thing you do, which is I don't really see like an easy move or an easy guy to move, or let's grab some prospects and maybe still stay competitive this year if things fall right. I don't really see a path other than just continue to play it out.
Talking with Kylie McDaniel, ESPN Baseball Insider, here on 670 The Score. I think they are a very interesting case, and there might be a little bit of desire to see things play out for the next few weeks for them, because they did go on a run right before the trade deadline last year, which kind of informed their decision to stick with things the way they are. Let's say that happens. Let's say the Cubs, as is, go into the trade deadline, past it, and nothing really of significance happens. And with all of these teams in the National League being bunched up and they're 5.5 out with a bunch of teams in front of them, What sort of playoff chances would you give a team like this Cubs team if they stay as is?
I mean, the good news of baseball is every team is competitive, and if you can have a effective closer and 2 or 3 good starters, you're as competitive as anybody, because anybody's lineup can get hot or have a good day or get a 3-run homer here or there. And I think the bullpen is, you know, fine at the back end of it. Yeah, I think Imanaga has been a good example, and, you know, Steele has been sort of, you know, good and bad, but mostly good the last year or two. I think they have the pieces to be competitive if they get there, especially if the team catches fire and the lineup is hitting and, you know, health is in the right direction and all that. Like, I could see the case that they would be a dangerous team because they have some of the components that makes a team. If, you know, three teams have the same record, what would make a team dangerous? It would be having a, you know, standout reliever and 2 or 3 good starters and, you know, a good top to bottom lineup with some platoon options and some, you know, bench options and depth. And that is kind of what they have. So I could see a world where this turns around. But, like, you know, going back to the earlier point we both made, there's a lot of really good teams that are all really qualified and almost all of them have better records than the Cubs that are, you know, right now. So it's not like a great situation, but it's not like wave the white flag, you know, go and become sellers and move all the veterans. Like, that's also not a move. So you got to play it out and see if maybe you can, you know, comes up snake eyes or get a lucky roll or something? Because that's essentially where we're at. Is it's like, you know, 1 in 12. Can you put it all together and catch a lucky run? Like, somebody's going to. So I guess you could say, why not us, if you're going to take the optimistic point of view.
As the season began this year, they had one of the best farm systems, a good farm system. They were considered by many people. Are they still there as we are now all the way into July? Does it still maintain that the Cubs have a pretty good farm system?
Yeah, I have them. I just pulled up my rankings right now. I've got them right at, like, basically tied for 9th or 10th. And they, you know, started the offseason at 2nd. I've had a couple guys graduate, Pete Armstrong and a couple others. So they've lost a little bit of ground, but they're also going to be able to add, you know, a top half of the first round pick. And then that top half of the second round pick as well will beef it up even further. So, yeah, I would say they started the season with a top 10 system. They've lost a couple guys to graduations to the big league team, and then I think we'll sustain a top 10 farm system. So, you know, whatever they want to trade for, they technically have the ammunition to make that happen. It's just a matter of, do they want to sort of, you know, cash those chips in the short term, or do they want to sort of save those for maybe this offseason to make a bigger move when that sort of big step forward to perennial contender happens that you think is on the horizon. It seems like the pieces are there, but I don't know what the sort of internal belief is and what the record will sort of dictate.
You mentioned Crow Armstrong, and that's a guy that intrigues a lot of people, mainly because the explosive speed, you see it and you think, okay, this guy could be something if he could put some offense together. How do you assess him as a player?
Yeah, I guess for better and worse, what he's shown so far in the big leagues is what some of the sort of rap was on him and why he didn't get in my overall top 20 on the top 100 prospects in baseball. Because he's seen as a plus runner, a double plus defender. He's been getting to power in the upper minors. He's a guy that didn't look like the biggest guy that would get to power, and then he figured out how to get there. And then the question was, is the bat to ball going to be good enough? It's just okay, maybe like a 250, 260 hitter on talent. And then it's his pitch selection. He'll chase a lot of pitches off the plate. Can he dial that in? There's a belief that that's the easiest part of hitting to learn, you know, relative to power or bat to ball ability, is that pitch selection, you can dial it in. If you're able to hit the ball, you can see it and make the decision and then hit it. So just take out the hitting part, you can lay off of it. And I don't think he's quite shown that adjustment yet, but he's now has had some concerns and has had some struggles in the big leagues. This is now the situation where he's had enough struggle that you can now go to him as a, you know, a front office or a coaching staff for, okay, what do we want to do here? How can we fix this? What's the move that can be made? Because I hear from teams all the time, we think this prospect needs to fix this thing, but he's still performing well. You can't go to him and tell him it's not working, even though we know it's not going to work at the next level. And so PCA is now at that point where he's having like his first real, like, you know, fall on his face moment offensively in the big leagues. Is he open to making that move? Can the move be made? This is the thing that'll basically define his career, because I think he's sort of guaranteed to be a really good fourth outfielder or maybe a low end starter that doesn't hit a whole lot, but plays really good defense. I mean, we've seen Kevin Kiermaier, Kevin Pillar, guys like that have been that kind of player for a long time, make a lot of money, have a nice career. Is he going to be able to hit enough to be better than that? I think he will. I don't know how much better than that he's going to be.
As a young player, also same sort of situation, I think, for Christopher Morel, who hasn't really hit for average all year. But, you know, there was a time where he, you know, he'll hit for power here and there. And you think, OK, maybe there's a little something there for him. As you look at him, do you have any sort of feeling that there's something there that they can work with and eventually hope he grows into it?
I think he is a good big league regular. I think he's always going to be a lower average guy. I mean, I'm looking at his numbers right now. He's hitting 197. He's not that guy. He's been notably unlucky. If you look at his numbers versus his expected numbers, which is usually a pretty good proxy for if there's been luck involved, it's almost 60 points of difference, which is among the biggest gap in the big league. So he's been notably unlucky. His BABIP, batting average on balls in play, should be around 280 to 300. It's at 213 right now. So that's kind of what's happening. He's hitting the ball in play, and he's sort of been snake bitten by more outs than you would expect, given the way he's hitting the ball. I think going forward, if he's one of these guys that can hit 240, he's going to have enough walks, enough power, enough sort of speed and defense to put that together and be a pretty good player, whether that's Yimer Candelario is like a comp, is like a guy that's a corner guy that kind of does everything pretty well but can kind of run hot and cold. I think he can be that kind of guy. Candelario also had some terrible seasons in the big leagues and some really good seasons in the big leagues. He was also sort of up and down and streaky. I think that's the kind of guy Morel is, but for all the sort of ups and downs he's had so far, he's played effectively two full seasons that has 57 home runs and 23 stolen bases. Like he's been a pretty productive player for a guy that's been up and down and is still pretty young. I think there's a near future here where he is not a guy you have to ask questions about. It's just a matter of, are the Cubs so good that he's maybe one of those guys that plays multiple positions and gets platooned here and there and kind of fits a role, or is he going to be one of the five or six core guys you mentioned at the beginning? I think he's more likely one of those very good role players that can play multiple positions.
Talking with Kylie McDaniel, talking some baseball here on 670 The Score, and we've been focusing a bit on the Cubs for the most part. There is a player, though, that I have, I don't know, I've got quite a bit of fondness of, as I think a lot of people in Chicago do, maybe not everybody, but Tim Anderson being designated for assignment this week, and it's very difficult to not think about the promise of the player, what he was just a couple of years ago, being on the cover of a video game. I mean, people are talking about him like the face of baseball, at least for a short period of time, and here we are where he's DFA'd. What have you made of his career as a major leaguer?
I'm still in my 30s, but I recently have had multiple times in the last year or two where I felt really old. If you ask me about Tim Anderson, I remember when I was working for three or four places ago, actually, where I went to go watch him play at a junior college in Mississippi in 2013 when he was the first-round pick. And I remember standing there with a bunch of scouts thinking, like, I had never heard of this guy's name 2 months ago. And after three swings, I'm like, this guy's a first-round pick. And then basically from there for the next, 5 years, he basically beat expectations at every level. Because the concern was, you know, is this guy, they go back to the Christopher Morel stuff, is the bat to ball good or great? And is the pitch selection going to be okay? The pitch selection was never really that good, but he always had the physical skills that he could figure out how to make that work. And you see some guys that are able to do that. And he was just electric as a runner, as an athlete, as a shortstop, with power, the personality, all these sorts of things. What usually happens with those kinds of players where the explosiveness and the athleticism sort of outshines or sort of runs past some of the soft skills that aren't there, like the pitch selection, is those guys peak really early and then fall off. And so you look at like his performance, and he basically at age 29, which is a little later than I would have guessed, started declining, and then just at age 30, it just sort of fell apart. And now he's, you know, his age 31 season and fell apart again. Usually those guys will get to 25 or 26 and the wheels fall off. So he managed to keep it going 3 or 4 years later than that. But that is unfortunately sometimes the career path of those sorts of players. You saw it with Starling Marte, the player sort of like that. He made it into his mid-30s. So sometimes it's not 24 or 25 and the wheels fall off. Sometimes it's 30 or 35. And, you know, Tim Anderson was a really good player, still might have a couple more good years in him if he can make the adjustment here. But I know coming into this past offseason when I was doing my free agent projections, a lot of people were telling me, hey, this guy might get 1 year, $8 or $10 million, might be a nice buy low candidate. He was pretty good in 22 and it was just bad in 23, might need to change scenery. Like, is this a guy? And now nobody really seems to be saying that. So I think he might have one or two more seasons where he has a chance to show, is there anything left, or is he going to, you know, sort of really fall off the map pretty abruptly in the way that, like, Andrelton Simmons is another example of a guy, just an incredible athlete, but just didn't necessarily have those soft skills. And when it fell off very quickly.
You know, anybody who in Chicago is aware of me knows that I've been arguing against the effectiveness of, well, I guess the influence of managers and how much they matter. And it's probably annoying to a lot of people who've heard me have this conversation that I think that we overvalue how much they do matter when it comes to the day-to-day, game-to-game, all that stuff, other than creating a good environment. What I'm wondering is it possible that maybe the environment with the White Sox bringing in Tony La Russa, a guy that nobody wanted to be the manager with the exception of one person who was the only decision that mattered or the only opinion that mattered at the time. Is it possible that whole dynamic helped lead to where we are, or is it just more physical tools?
So I worked for, we'll say, a couple dysfunctional baseball franchises, one of them being Baltimore. And this was, you know, before Mike Elias, before all that. And I noticed in just my 1 year working in that front office how many different things ran poorly because the owner was doing a bad job. you would think, oh, the owner's like going into meetings and telling people to do the wrong thing. Like you'd be, you know, sort of very hands-on and directly affecting things. That wasn't the way it worked. It would be the person in charge is not good at their job, but they do what they do, the thing the owner likes. They throw the party at the right place, or, you know, gives him credit in the program in the way he likes, or likes to play golf with him. Like a thing that's completely unrelated to the job, and then has that job and gets paid a ton of money, and make sure that the payroll is low inside, you know, their department, or the payroll for the big league team, or, you know, whatever it is, does all the things the owner wants them to do. And you could argue all of them are bad. And I don't know as much because I haven't worked for the White Sox. I get the impression that Jerry Reinsdorf does a lot of the same stuff, where it's not directly making the team bad or walking in the clubhouse and yelling at the players or something as obvious as that, because I think that would have been nipped in the bud already. But I think there's a lot of things that the Tony La Russa decision sort of illustrates, where it's like when Chris Getz was hired, I was asking around about who's going to be the GM, and they're like, well, it's going to be somebody that Reinsdorf has known for a long time, because that's the number one and only qualification, is if he's known you for at least a decade, then you're on the list. And if he hasn't, then he won't talk to you about it. Like, you're not getting the job. And so that's why it's always been sort of an internal candidate or a guy that used to work there or a guy he's familiar with. He just doesn't hire people in that way for the front office. And very rarely is the manager somebody that isn't, you know, have some sort of familiarity or, you know, some sort of, you know, won a World Series back in the 80s or, you know, whatever it was. And so I just look at the franchise, and if you say any one thing, why is this not working? I won't know exactly why that one thing is not working, but it's always going to go back to the owner. And I think if you're making a list of the bottom five owners in baseball, like, he's on there. Even if I can't say exactly what the thing is that he does, I've been around that kind of stuff enough that I know that it goes back to that guy.
Where, how many organizations do you think there are like that in baseball right now?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I mean, Oakland's there, but they're trying to leave town, and that guy, that's just a terrible situation.
And that's also so obvious that I think if you ask even a casual baseball fan, like, who's a bad owner, they'd be like, oh, well, the Oakland guy seems like he's terrible. Artie Moreno with the Angels is just a nightmare on multiple levels. I would say Jim Crane in Houston causes some problems for his baseball operations. Let's see. Pittsburgh, I don't think, is in a great situation. Boston's are awful, because that team should be top five in baseball, and they are not, because the owner doesn't think winning is that important, and that's a giant problem. I think the Mets are probably, like, have their head above water there now. They used to be a giant problem there. I think Miami is fine, and I think that might be the rest of the situation. I think San Diego, obviously, switching the man control now has, like, the payroll capability is lower, so they've had a bit of a downgrade there just because there's less money available, but I don't think they're anywhere near, like, this sort of conversation. And I also throw out Colorado. They've been bad for a long time, and I think that's mostly tied to the owner.
You know, the Cubs, I think they're a good organization. I think this offseason they probably did not hit the gas when they should have, and it's sort of showing right now. Despite the fact they've got a top seven payroll, it is a this is a number three market, and it's the Cubs. It's a team with resources. Do you imagine that next offseason they will commit a little bit more in that area?
Yeah, you sort of hear their name mentioned, especially at this early juncture when you talk about what free agency is going to look like next year. I know when I did an article, I think it was about 3 weeks ago, projecting what Juan Soto's contract would be. And, of course, it's a lot of Yankees and Mets as the rumored teams, because they're, you know, thought to be at the forefront of, we want to spend money to upgrade the team, big markets, Scott Boras will play nice, all that sort of thing. And then you ask, like, okay, who are some of the second-tier teams where you think they might be involved? And you hear, you know, Texas, they've sort of, you know, been on the fringes. Semien and Seager both came from Boras as well. They seem willing to sort of spend money. They're not playing that well this year. You could see them going there. Toronto went after Ohtani last year. And a lot of people sort of mention the Cubs as like, oh, that would make sense. Like, they seem like they're about to, you know, sort of turn the key and really make that move, and he would be a big marquee guy. I think a lot of owners that maybe aren't excited to run the payroll up see a guy like Juan Soto. It's like, oh, we need a superstar. You can market the team better. There's, like, a little more value there than, like, maybe two players of half the value of the contract that are just good players. You don't get the superstar value you get with getting Soto. So I think there's been a thought, and that was the same talk going into two offseasons ago when Swanson came, and that was the case. I mean, they spent nine figures on, like, a big sort of, you know, face of the franchise sort of player. Taken from another contending team in the NL. So I think they're sort of perceived as being on the fringes of that discussion, that if it's not going to be just an all-out bidding war, that they'll have a chance to be in play on a lot of those guys. And obviously, you know, hung around long enough to get, you know, Cody Bellinger. They gave, you know, a decent amount of AAV to Marcus Stroman, got a nice deal on Imanaga. Like, they've definitely been in those markets. I wonder if they're going to step up to the level of really being on, you know, these $200 million plus sort of premium players in baseball. You could argue whether that's a good decision or not, if, you know, to be in those markets. But I think that's the potential. That's where this could go. If you look back to the Theo Epstein teams, which obviously have a lot of DNA in common with this team in terms of the front office and the blueprints and things like that, you saw that there was, you know, the willingness to go John Lester and, you know, Yu Darvish and all these sorts of guys. And that hasn't quite happened yet, but I wonder if we're just like one winter, maybe two winters away from the Cubs being in that discussion.
Kylie McDaniel, enjoyed the conversation tonight. Thanks for talking to us on a Friday on a holiday weekend.
Yeah, also tomorrow's my birthday, so I mean, you really got me the right day.
Oh, do you just want to hang out with us for the next, let's see, you can't do math, 3.5 hours until it is your birthday, or 2.5 hours?
I'm about to go to the grocery store and then the gym, but yeah, I trashed enough owners. We could go to other sports. I could start trashing hockey owners. I could really get in there and take some shots at people.
Okay, name the first hockey owner you want to trash right now.
I probably said the wrong sport because I don't know that many hockey owners. I grew
okay,
up
how
Tampa,
about NBA?
So the guy in Tampa's doing a good job. Yeah.
how about NBA? NBA.
Well, the problem is, you know, Sterling, Dan Snyder, like all the immediate, like just rolls right off your tongue answers, I think, have sort of been drummed out of the game. I'm not positive who the real problematic guys are. I know some people have made the case that while he's spending a lot of money, Steve Ballmer has been counterproductive, and Ishbia, the new guy in Phoenix, seems like maybe not the most savory character in business, and then also like ran his team into a corner where they don't have any draft picks or any young players now. So there's a lot of, you know, really good options. It's a topic I'm really passionate about.
Appreciate you not saying Bulls. We could use the break. Thank you.
Is that still Jerry Krause?
Really? Oh, man. We're still giving that poor guy. That poor guy just taking bullets for no reason.
Yeah, what a few rings I heard.
yeah, he was in he did really well, and everybody trashed him. Sick of it. I'm not having any more Jerry Krause slander around here. Kylie
well, on my
McDaniel,
way out, I'll
thank
ask you.
You
if in the next segment you want to talk about the Bears and what they're going to become.
Oh, we're going to get to the Bears, but everything is roses with the Bears right now. I'm not having your crap. Don't even start.
Well, no, nothing's happened yet. It's like everyone loves the backup quarterback because he hasn't played, so we don't know what's going to happen.
Well, okay, we're not talking about Tyson Bagent again and his pure bloodline. I mean, you probably never heard that because there was a caller one time not too long ago to this station who said Tyson Bagent should play, and the first reason was he came from a pure bloodline, which I don't know what the hell that guy's talking about, but those are our
starting
callers.
To get into a problematic area. I'll just say that I am pro Roma Dunze. I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Well, so are we. We're really excited about him. Thank you, Kylie. We appreciate it. Happy birthday.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Kylie McDaniel, insider for ESPN, covers baseball and is with us. I'm just now remembering that phone call. That is unbelievable. I know Leo knows about it. I'm sure the station has been talking about it after it happened. Just unbelievable stuff. I mean, it's not that unbelievable nowadays, but it's still, you know what I mean. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Would love to hear from you. Chris Ronji tonight on The Score.
Secret agent man.
We're back with host Chris Ronji on The Score.
The audacity of people. Hope you're having a great evening tonight. 312-644-6767 to talk with us tonight. This message from a 262, it says at this point in the season, and they're talking about the Cubs, I don't think I'm even interested in a buy trade at all. I am close to even being all in for a complete sell. It's from a 262. And again, they're not really in position for a complete teardown. That's not what they are. They've got enough young talent that you do want to have hang around and see where it goes and supplement that talent. And the guys who are expensive are tougher to trade. So I'm not sure they're really, I don't think they're that kind of team. I don't think they're a tear it down kind of team. They might be the kind of team that you make a deal, but there is no starting over with this club. That's not who they are. And it's weird to say because it leads us to this next text message from a 309. Hello, Central Illinois. The problem is they spent poorly. And yeah, as I mentioned earlier, they've got a seventh payroll, seventh highest in baseball. There are some contracts, certainly they would like to not have right now, but there is still a lot of good young talent around them. And I think that's really the issue, is that you're probably not trading any of those guys unless you're willing to reset the clock even more. And I just don't think that's who this club is. Keep in mind the division they're in. I know the Brewers are always, and that team annoys me maybe more than any other team in baseball, because every single year I think they're probably about done, and every single year they are still either at the top of the division or close to it every single year, and I never know what to think. And they're doing it again this year. They're leading the division, and I thought, yeah, they're not going to be that good this year, and here they are. But otherwise, they're a team without a whole lot of resources. The Cardinals have spent in the past, but you still have more resources than they are willing to spend. So this division, there's no reason the Cubs could not buy a division title for the next several years. It's totally possible. And so that's why I don't think I'd want to regress even more in terms of the roster. Let's try and get to a quick phone call. Let's talk to Bob in Joliet. Quickly, Bob, what's going on?
Hey, Chris. Hey, I used to talk to you when you were with the Score all the time. I missed your, sort of your warped sense of humor. So, okay.
Thank you. So, that's a great compliment. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. It's meant in a good way. Okay. I know your friends at Grody. Hey, you know, he was seen on the Bears sideline a couple years ago with the Score sunglasses. I picked those up when I met one of your old associates at a Comcast store. I went on a Wendella boat ride with a girl. I gave the sunglasses to her, never got them back. Is there any way you can tell Grody to mail me a pair of, the Score sunglasses?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we're going to have him on in about 20 or so minutes. I will ask him when we have him on.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. No problem.
I got an admission. I was a White Sox fan for 50-plus years. Just this year, I went over to the Cubs.
Oh, no.
Just,
you're allowed.
Just to let you know.
Yeah.
50-plus years.
I appreciate the phone call, and I'm going to tell you something. If anybody wants to defect from one side of town to the other, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. There was a time maybe 15 years ago I would have blasted you for it, but no, man. I do not blame you, because you are not obligated to do anything you don't want to do, and you don't have to devote your energy, passion, time, money, any of those things into a team that doesn't love you back. And if you don't think the White Sox love you back, then you do whatever in the hell you want to do, because you only get one of these lives. And if you want to spend it being happier, then you pick a team that's going to help you get there. So you go right ahead, Bob. I am not upset with you. Let's talk to Tony Andracki. We will talk some Cubs with him when we come back. And yes, Mark Grody is going to join the show next hour. And I'll see if he can find a pair of sunglasses from Bob and Joliet. I'm Chris Ranji on The Score.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From you, Chris Ranji, tonight on The Score.
Secret agent, man.
We're back with host Chris Ranji on The Score.
The audacity of people. Hope you're having a great evening tonight. 312-644-6767 to talk with us tonight. This message from a 262, it says, at this point in the season, and they're talking about the Cubs, I don't think I'm even interested in a buy trade at all. I am close to even being all in for a complete sell. It's from a 262. And again, they're not really in position for a complete teardown. That's not what they are. They've got enough young talent that you do want to have hang around and see where it goes and supplement that talent. And the guys who are expensive are tougher to trade. So I'm not sure they're really... I don't think they're that kind of team. I don't think they're a tear-it-down kind of team. They might be the kind of team that you make a deal, but there is no starting over with this club. That's not who they are. And it's weird to say, because it leads us to this next text message from a 309. Hello, Central Illinois. The problem is they spent poorly. And yeah, as I mentioned earlier, they've got a seventh payroll, seventh highest in baseball. There are some contracts certainly they would like to not have right now, but there is still a lot of good young talent around them. And I think that's really the issue, is that you're probably not trading any of those guys unless you're willing to reset the clock even more. And I just don't think that's who this club is. Keep in mind the division they're in. I know the Brewers are always, and that team annoys me maybe more than any other team in baseball, because every single year I think they're probably about done, and every single year they are still either at the top of the division or close to it every single year, and I never know what to think. And they're doing it again this year. They're leading the division, and I thought, they're not going to be that good this year, and here they are. But otherwise, they're a team without a whole lot of resources. The Cardinals have spent in the past, but you still have more resources than they are willing to spend. So this division, there's no reason the Cubs could not buy a division title for the next several years. It's totally possible. And so that's why I don't think I'd want to regress even more in terms of the roster. Let's try and get to a quick phone call. Let's talk to Bob in Joliet. Quickly, Bob, what's going on?
Hey, Chris. Hey, I used to talk to you when you're with the Score all the time. I missed your, sort of your warp sense of humor. So, okay.
Thank you. So, that's a great compliment. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. It's meant in a good way. Okay. I know your friends of Grody. Hey, you know, he was seen on the Bears sideline a couple years ago with the Score sunglasses. I picked those up when I met one of your old associates at a Comcast store. I went on a Wendella boat ride with a girl. I gave the sunglasses to her, never got them back. Is there any way you can tell Grody to mail me a pair of, the Score sunglasses?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we're going to have him on in about 20 or so minutes. I will ask him when we have him on.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. No problem.
I got an admission. I was a White Sox fan for 50-plus years. Just this year, I went over to the Cubs.
Oh, no.
Just,
you're allowed.
Just to let you know.
Yeah.
50-plus years.
I appreciate the phone call, and I'm going to tell you something. If anybody wants to defect from one side of town to the other, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. There was a time maybe 15 years ago I would have blasted you for it. But no, man, I do not blame you, because you are not obligated to do anything you don't want to do, and you don't have to devote your energy, passion, time, money, any of those things into a team that doesn't love you back. And if you don't think the White Sox love you back, then you do whatever in the hell you want to do, because you only get one of these lives. And if you want to spend it being happier, then you pick a team that's going to help you get there. So you go right ahead, Bob. I am not upset with you. Let's talk to Tony Andracki. We will talk some Cubs with him when we come back. And yes, Mark Grody is going to join the show next hour. And I'll see if he can find a pair of sunglasses from Bob and Joliet. I'm Chris Ranji on The Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.